coming up on today's program.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
A famous fictional Thanksgiving classic. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. When and how turkeys actually do fly, coming up later in the program on Today from the Ohio Newsroom. Up first, we're jumping on the holiday bus this weekend. During the month of December, an historic piece of Dayton's transportation past can once again be seen among the downtown traffic. It's the RTA Christmas Trolley, and last year, as it made its return, we hopped on to talk with some of the people responsible for getting the trolley back on the road.
Okay, get ready, huh?
It's a cold Saturday morning in downtown Dayton, and the Greater Dayton RTA's historic Christmas trolley is pulling up to make its final run of the day.
I'm guessing you're with WISO?
Yeah.
The trolley has been operating for a few hours on Mondays and Saturdays since its debut appearance in the Dayton Children's Parade. It has a storied history that's well known to local trolley enthusiast Tom Morrow. He explains how Bus 559 has been resurrected several times in its 76-year history.
It's a 1948 Marmon Harrington TC-48, built in Indianapolis, Indiana. It originally ran in Columbus from 1948 to 1965. Columbus got out of the trolley bus business in June of 1965, put this bus into a junkyard, and Dayton resurrected it. Dayton City Transit came and resurrected it, bought it for $100 and a set of tires, and dragged it back to Dayton, rebuilt the bus, put it on the street.
Do you know how they found it?
Oh, it was well known that Columbus had a reputation in the industry of doing a really great job of maintenance. And Dayton, at that point in time, was looking to be able to get a few more buses because their buses at that point were starting to wear out. Columbus's buses were well taken care of, and so they knew if they got those buses, they would be able to get a lot more life out of them. And in the case of this one, it was rebuilt in 1970. City Transit put it on the street. The RTA took it over in 1972. Dayton had a program in 1975-76 where they had what they called seasonal buses. This particular bus, 559, was fall. And it ran as fall from 1975 to 76. And in 1977, it was made into the Christmas trolley. The outer design of the bus was done by Blommel Sign Company, which is a fallen flag name here in Dayton. I don't know that they're still in business. But Blommel did the outer of the bus, and this is the paint job from 1977.
The Dayton Christmas trolley ran from 1977 to 1988. Then RTA decided to eliminate their historic fleet, and Bus 559 was donated to San Francisco Municipal Railway as part of their historic vehicle fleet. It was used as a holiday bus in San Francisco for a short time before being sidelined. The 76-year-old piece of rolling history made the 2,300-mile journey back to Dayton in 2021 after RTA CEO Bob Ruzinski thought it was time to bring the trolley back home to Dayton. Restoration of the trolley was soon underway, but with some challenges. Ryan Lovelace is one of the RTA mechanics who met those challenges head on.
From obtaining parts that we needed up until just finding rusty bolts and this thing was very dirty, so it was very heavy cleaning. Just all kinds of challenges we met throughout the whole summer and fall. And we actually finished, I think it was about middle of November. Then we started adding on, you know, the finishing touches like the lights and maybe little tiny little things here and there.
Lovelace says the payoff for their hard work can be seen in the faces of trolley riders stepping onto the bus and stepping back in time.
Being a part of the resurrection of it, because it was left in the back 40 there in San Francisco and kind of just forgotten about. And just for it to come home to Dayton, you know, like where it belongs, it means a lot to me just to bring everybody together back again and seeing it and making them happy. And it's definitely going to be a highlight of my career, being a part of this bus.
Michael Baldwin is the other mechanic responsible for bringing Bus 559 back to life. For him, the trolley's not just a part of the city's past, but also his own.
When I was a kid, my mother actually took me for a ride on this bus, and so it kind of was a little bit of a sentimental thing for me, too. We lived over on Huffman Avenue, and it would come down the street, and we rode out to, at the time, it was the VA. It went out Home Avenue and did a turnaround out at the VA and then back to over to East Dayton on Huffman Avenue. And it was just, you know, it kind of gives me a sense of pride and the memories of growing up here in Dayton.
As our ride finally gets underway, Lovelace carefully moves the trolley out into traffic. It's a bit tricky since the bus has no turn indicators, only outside flags that will drop to tell others the bus will be turning. So Lovelace has to watch what's in front of him, but also keep his eyes on the sides and the back of the bus. As we make our way through downtown Dayton, Tom Morrow stands to tell a handful of riders about the trolley's history and takes their questions.
Dayton is one of only four cities in the country that have trolley buses. And this is one of only five Marmon Harringtons, the 1,500 and some that were built. This is one of only five that still run. So it's a remarkable piece of history. And as you can see, they don't skimp on heat. The resistor grids work very well.
As we take our loop around downtown Dayton, the trolley makes a big impression on the pedestrians outside, who point excitedly at the bus as it passes. And inside, there's more excitement for young riders. At the back of the trolley, sitting comfortably in a chair next to a fireplace and Christmas tree, a waving and smiling Santa Claus. John Kern has been moonlighting as Santa in Dayton for years. The trolley tours over the last few weeks have been just as special to him.
Oh, you get lots of joy, happiness, peace, love. They love to ride this bus, and it brings back memories for them. So it's a very nice piece of history here that we're riding on. There you can see the twinkle in their eyes.
The Dayton Christmas Trolley is a resurrection story all its own. Bus 559 has served riders in three U.S. cities in its 76-year history and holds a special place in the memories of many Daytonians. There are chances to ride the trolley this season, weather permitting, with rides leaving Right Stop Plaza at 3rd and Main every 15 minutes. For WYSO, I'm Jerry Kenney.
Hello, WYSO listeners. This is Luke Dennis, the general manager here. I am full of gratitude this season. I'm thankful for my loving family, for friends to play pickleball and music with, and for having work that I'm proud to do. I am also so very grateful for you. During a year that saw the rescission of our federal subsidy, it just could have been a disaster, but we have the greatest, most generous audience anywhere, and your increased support these past months is keeping WYSO stable. So thank you. I wish you and yours a joyous holiday season.
Hi, this is Sarah Woodhull, the Major Gift Officer here at WYSO. Here it is, Thanksgiving already. Who knew it would come around so fast? But I want to share what I am thankful for this holiday is mostly my family and friends and my work and neighbors and all the food we get to eat, which is amazing, and my dog. And so happy Thanksgiving.
You're listening to WYSO Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. The Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays are a time for food, family, and friends. They also generate a lot of trash that can have a negative impact on the environment. Jamie Shepard is a community outreach and education administrator at the Montgomery County Environmental Learning Center. She gives us tips on minimizing the environmental impact of holiday meals with the three R's: reduce, reuse, and recycle.
To really start reducing, especially that food waste, create realistic meal plans. So really think about what you are going to realistically consume during your holiday dinner. How many guests are you going to have? Check your pantry before you go shopping. See if you have any ingredients for those meals already. A lot of us do like to have leftovers from the Thanksgiving meal. You want your your turkey gravy, your turkey fricassee, your turkey omelets, your turkey sandwiches and soups. So plan those portions ahead of time. If you know you want leftovers, be realistic and make a plan for how you're going to use those leftovers as well. Being intentional about your consumption, and then looking at what you have left over. Do you have food scraps left over, either from the meal preparation or after the meal, that can be composted? There are many of us now that compost at home. And so when you're looking at home composting, it's a great way to keep those food scraps out of the landfill. But we do have to be mindful about what we put in those home composting systems. So looking at your fruit and veggie kind of scraps and avoiding things like meats, bones, and dairies that would attract critters and just not break down well in those systems. Looking at recycling, there are a lot of our components of our Thanksgiving meal that come in recyclable packaging. So we can look at what came in a can, making sure that we're recycling all of those aluminum cans. We're recycling glass jars for our gravies, including that metal lid can also be recycled. So making sure that you know out of those food packaging, what can I recycle with my leftover?
What is the best way to dispose of unwanted food? Put it in the trash or put it down the garbage disposer, or is there some other way?
That's a great question. So with those fruit and veggie components, as long as there's not too much butter, dairy, oil, those leftovers could theoretically be composted. But if you have the ability and you're holding your food during that Thanksgiving meal at a safe temperature or making sure that any leftover components get refrigerated immediately, think about what your family might want to take home. If you have guests coming in and they can take those leftovers home with them, that can help reduce that food waste as well. You can also do things like gather your neighbors together for potlucks, have ways to distribute the leftovers that way, have to-go containers for your family to take things home with them. If you have neighbors that you know are maybe on their own for Thanksgiving, offering some of those leftovers to them is nice as well.
What are some common mistakes that people make when it comes to Thanksgiving that may harm the environment more than people may realize?
So I think that recycling can be a tricky point for some folks. So when you are recycling your food packaging, make sure that you know what is currently accepted for recycling in your area. Recycling can vary a bit regionally. So if you're planning on having out-of-town guests, the things that are recycled in their area may not be the things that you can recycle here. So learning to recycle right. With your Thanksgiving meal, you're going to see things like aluminum cans, glass bottles and jars. Aluminum and glass are almost endlessly recyclable, so you want to make sure you capture those. Paperboard packaging is highly recyclable, so capturing that material. Plastics in our area, so Montgomery County and the surrounding counties, we're looking at only things like plastic bottles, jugs, and tubs to focus for recycling.
Do you have any other advice about ways to keep Thanksgiving more environmentally friendly?
Absolutely. So using reusable dishes, napkins, cups, utensils, rather than those disposable options are going to keep your holidays a little greener. The same goes with decorations. So we don't necessarily need to go out and buy brand new decorations for every holiday that we have. If we're able to reuse what we already have, some of those items can become cherished family traditions. And if you are in need of new table settings, you can also check your secondhand stores. So buying used can be a good component as well. Thanksgiving is a great time to really show gratitude for what we have and the resources that our earth provides. And being grateful for those things also means being a good steward and really looking at minimizing waste. So we want to be joyful this holiday. We want to have a great time with our family and friends and our loved ones, but also being mindful of the impact that we have on the earth and trying to be considerate of those resources.
I'm Juliette Frumholt, WYSO's music director. And in addition to being thankful for all of the regular things, my family, my partner, my cat, and great music, I am thankful for community. This year, we've seen people in our local community stand hand in hand in support of one another, and sometimes in support of WYSO too. And it's inspiring, it's invigorating, and it's something I am really grateful for.
And we hope you've had a great holiday weekend so far. Thanks so much for joining us. Up next on Why So Weekend, a recent study from Trace One found that Ohio is eighth in the nation for turkey production, bringing in over $153 million in production value to the state. It also found that those turkeys have increased in size as the demand for the product steadily rose since the 1960s.
So how many did you say are left right now?
We probably have about 4,000 turkeys left.
The business started off humbly, raising just a few thousand turkeys a year. Now it produces over 75,000 turkeys annually. Since its founding, demand for their free-range turkeys has increased, peaking over the last 20 to 30 years. That's according to Drew Bowman. He serves as a third-generation co-owner of Bowman and Landis.
A lot of that is, you know, people going back to their roots and wanting to know where their food comes from and, you know, connecting more with their local farmers and producers. I think that means more to a lot of people today and, you know, in the last 20 years maybe than it did prior to that.
Most of the turkeys produced at the family farm fly out the doors by Thanksgiving. But Bowman says 10 to 30-pound turkeys are still available for Christmas. The farm also offers other turkey products year-round out of their retail store and other local vendors, including Kroger and Tom's Market. For WYSO News, I'm Shay Frank.
All right, and this may be the segment you've been waiting for. The sitcom WKRP in Cincinnati, about a fictional Ohio radio station, went off the air 40 years ago, but it lives on in pop culture memory because of an iconic Thanksgiving episode. From the very real Cincinnati radio station, WVXU, Bill Reinhart reports on the truth behind the make-believe radio station's stunt.
Even if you've never watched WKRP in Cincinnati, there's one line you're probably familiar with.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
That's Dayton native Gordon Jump as WKRP station manager Arthur Carlson. In the first season of the show, Mr. Carlson planned a Thanksgiving promotion where the station would give away turkeys. In dramatic fashion, the turkeys would be dropped from a helicopter to a shopping mall's parking lot. Spoiler alert, as Howard Hessman's Dr. Johnny Fever says, it didn't go well.
You just tuned in. The Pinedale Shopping Mall has just been bombed with live turkeys.
But one of the head bird keepers at the Cincinnati Zoo says turkeys can fly.
They're just not great flyers.
Ricky Kinley says, don't look for a flock of turkeys flying south for the winter in a V formation. Generally, they have no reason to fly. They eat acorns and other seeds and bugs, all things that can be found on the ground.
Turkeys have some of the shortest wings in proportion to body weight of most bird species. And part of the reason is turkeys, their wings are mostly meant just for brief escapes from predators. So they're mostly wandering around on the ground, but if a predator or a threat comes along, they can have a very strong burst of flight.
If birds don't have to fly, Kinley says, they won't because flying takes up so much energy.
Whenever birds are in an environment where they don't have to fly, meaning they have access to mate choices, they have plenty of food, and they have the absence of predators, they tend to lose the ability to fly.
He points to ostriches and cassowaries as examples.
The dodo bird's a perfect example of a bird that lived on an island that did not have the need to fly because it had no predators and it had plenty of food, lost the ability to fly. But that came to his expense once sailors found dodo birds.
And while evolution hasn't taken turkeys' ability to fly away, it has dulled it over time. Farm-raised turkeys can fly too, though because they're bred for their meat, they're heavier and even worse at it than their wild counterparts.
They definitely don't want to fly, but they can fly. It's just much harder for them. They can't fly very well. And oftentimes domesticated turkeys where they're housed, they don't have a whole lot of need or opportunities to fly.
That means the fictional turkeys in the WKRP episode did at least slow their descent after leaving the helicopter. In the episode, award-winning newsman Les Nessman, played by Richard Sanders, reports the turkeys lived.
I really don't know how to describe it. It was like the turkeys mounted a counterattack.
No actual turkeys were hurt or even shown in the episode. According to the Ohio Poultry Association, the Buckeye State is ninth in the nation for turkey production. The association reports nearly 19,000 jobs are created from the industry. They don't say if any of those are helicopter pilots or station managers. For the Ohio Newsroom, I'm Bill Reinhart in Cincinnati.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Mike Fraser from WYSO's Morning Edition. Legend has it that a Cincinnati radio station bombed a shopping center with a bunch of turkeys dropped from a helicopter as a publicity stunt. I thought we could do something like that here at YSO by dropping a bunch of frozen turkeys from drones onto Courthouse Square. Management told me to go away and stop giving them stupid ideas. How about instead we drop thanks onto you for supporting us during a very challenging year? We appreciate each and every one of you.
Hello, I'm Samantha Zimmer. I'm the news director here at WYSO, and I'm thankful for the teacher at my kids' school who, unsolicited, sent me a short note saying he stops at our classroom every morning to say hi, and it makes her smile. It was such a small gesture that reminded me how much kindness can change the course of our day. So I hope some small acts of kindness find their way to your doorstep or your inbox this Thanksgiving.
I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend, and you know, one sure sign of the holiday season is nativity sets. Those sculpted scenes of Mary, Joseph, and the baby Jesus in a manger. They pop up in front of churches and houses, under Christmas trees, just about everywhere. And the University of Dayton's Marion Library has one of the largest collections of nativity sets in the country. Last year, they featured a newly composed musical piece about a juggler. Jason Reynolds brought us that story.
Sarah Cahalan is the director of the Marion Library. She says the nativity tradition goes back to about the 1300s.
The tradition is that people would set up, in the early days, probably living nativities with people kind of acting out the parts of the Holy Family, of Mary, Joseph, and the baby Jesus, the shepherds, etc., right from the story in the Bible. And then later it became an artistic tradition as well, where people would make statues and paintings, mosaics. When you get into like Renaissance Italy, for example, people are competing over having the most luxurious, huge, extravagant nativity sets.
The Marion Library has thousands of nativities, though Cahalan says they can only display a couple dozen at a time. The collection has pieces from around the globe, too. One nativity is by Sidney Matias, a Brazilian artist. He portrays Mary as a native Amazonian in the rainforest. She's resting in a hammock with a newborn baby in her arms. But if you walk around to the backside of the sculpture, behind some trees, you'll see a white businessman in a suit, with horns on his head and dollar signs over his eyes.
It sort of shows this idea of paradise, and there's also a bit of a political element to it because he's very concerned about the degradation of the Amazon. So there's some element of is paradise being lost as well.
The materials used to make the nativities are diverse too. There's a large, fragile, fold-out paper nativity that was made in the 1800s in Germany. It's colorful, and it doesn't just show a manger, but also the buildings and trees of Bethlehem. There's also a recent donation of a giant terracotta nativity by Dayton artist Robert Kapnick. There's an Amish nativity, a Mexican nativity, and the list goes on. And this year, in addition to nativities from around the globe, the Marion Library has a special show about a juggler who, legend has it, was blessed by Jesus' mother, Mary.
The story really goes back like 800 years. So if you go way back, you can start with medieval manuscripts where this story first shows up about a little tumbler or juggler or acrobat who performed for a statue of the Virgin Mary on Christmas Eve. Everybody else had other gifts to give, but this was the only thing that he could offer. And in fact, there were people in his community who found it kind of sacrilegious, inappropriate. You know, why are you juggling for Mary? That's not right. That's not as special as making her a book or performing a concert for her. But the way that the story goes is that at the end of his performance, when he's completely worn out, the statue comes to life and either smiles or she bows down and wipes his brow. And the message is that, you know, the gifts that we have are the gifts that God wants.
The story of the juggler has been retold in art and architecture and literature for ages, but it really took off about a century ago. That's when Jules Massenet turned it into an opera called Le Jongleur de Notre Dame. The opera was a sensation that inspired over a dozen different musical retellings. Then, in the 1970s, popular children's author and illustrator Tommy DePaula turned the legend into a book called The Clown of God, which was also adapted into a musical. And now, the University of Dayton has commissioned a new version of the story, a piece for soprano, piano, and clown. Andrea Chenoweth-Wells is a soprano and lecturer at the University of Dayton. She's also one of the people behind the new production.
We came up with an original text based on the story that really explored what we felt when we were performing, what made performing special for us, and how we felt that our performing was itself sort of a spiritual act.
Chenoweth-Wells says she hopes the work will speak to both performers and the community as a whole.
At the end, the Virgin Mary, when she comes to life, says to Barnaby, the juggler, "My child, you are enough, just as you are." I think the ultimate purpose of this work is to communicate that each person has a special gift and that your life should be about finding what that gift is and sharing it with other people.
For Culture Couch at WYSO, I'm Jason Reynolds.
This year, the University of Dayton's free annual Nativities exhibit is exploring how artists around the world imagine Jesus' birthplace. Seeking Shelter Beyond the Stable is open now through January 16th in the Resch Library and features nativity sets from the Marian Library's international collection of more than 3,600 nativity sets.
Hi there, this is Chris Westhoff. I live in Yellow Springs. I'm a regular listener to WYSO, and I am so grateful to live in a community that cares about what other people think and feel and want to know more about what's going on with their neighbors.
DJ Lady Bounce coming in with a big, big thank you this Thanksgiving. This season is all about gratitude, and I just gotta say, I'm so thankful for you. Whether you've been riding with me all year, turning up at my live spots, or just vibing to my mixes, you make it all possible. This Thanksgiving, I hope your plate is stacked, your heart is full, and your home is filled with laughter, love, and amazing memories. Take a moment to appreciate the blessing, because there's always something to be thankful for. From my turntables to your table, happy Thanksgiving. And don't forget, keep bouncing.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Schrader, the digital editor here at WYSO. As we approach Thanksgiving, I've been thinking about how thankful I am for community. I live in the city of Dayton, and, you know, and the news we've seen about kind of this crisis of loneliness that so many folks are facing. And I'm so thankful that I've been able to find, whether it's a guardian group, book club, folks who are civically engaged, or the community that I found here at WYSO that WYSO is trying to build out in the area. I'm thankful for this connection this time of year.
Hello, I am Jay Swiffer, an artist from the community, and this is... We are thankful for the community here, and thankful for family, just thankful for waking up every day. How about you, Maya? What are you thankful for?
Mommy.
She's thankful for her mommy.
Hi, my name is Angie. I'm a big WYSO fan, and I'm thankful for the chance to create with people, with new and old friends, to create art and create spaces and create food.
Some final holiday greetings, putting a wrap on this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks so much for joining us and sharing your weekend with WYSO. We've got more features, highlights, conversations coming your way next weekend. Please join us then.